Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Native Youth Olympics have been growing in recent years across Alaska. Two coaches from Juno's team visited Petersburg last week to show elementary and middle school students what these sports are all about. KFSK's Hannah Floor joined a fourth and fifth grade gym class and has a story.
I'm Coach Matthew. This is Coach Duke.
Several dozen kids sit in a wobbly line on the floor of Petersburg's community gym. Matthew Quinto and Duke Nyo are visiting from Juno, where they coach Native Youth Olympics.
We're going to show you guys some games that have been played here in Alaska for hundreds, if not thousands, of years.
The two men kick balls suspended in the air by twine. They're demonstrating the one-foot and two-foot high kick. The different high kicks were used by hunters to signal to their community across the tundra.
And what did one-foot mean?
It means an unsuccessful hunt, but you're still safe.
Yes, perfect.
Quinto says the games taught people of the circumpolar north survival skills.
So when you think about Inupiaq, Yupik, Sotmi, any of those indigenous nations up there, the way they had to live, if you had to hop across ice floes, you had to be coordinated with your feet.
He says the point of the games is to help each other and work on survival and hunting skills.
Balance is really important on the ice, right? If you want to slip, one hand reach. You need food, you have to go hunting. And so there's stick pole and any arm pole, all those games that we play together, they help us get stronger so that we can help each other survive.
Some games simulate the pain of frostbite. In one, competitors curl their toes underneath their feet and walk on their toe knuckles.
Which I cannot do. I will not do it. It hurts so bad. But it's to demonstrate how bad it feels when you get your toes frostbitten, right? Because sometimes when you're out there, it's either warm up your toes or you're going to lose them.
Petersburg's Native Youth Olympics team is new. It started just over 4 years ago as part of an attempt to keep middle school kids active and engaged during the early days of COVID. Kids were able to learn and practice the events virtually. The team has been growing steadily. Last year, 13 middle schoolers from Petersburg competed at Juno's traditional games. This year, more than twice that number are making the trip. And the sport has been gaining popularity around the state and even in the lower 48. Quinto thinks that's partly because it's so easy to love. He says people are drawn to the way athletes support each other, prioritizing camaraderie over competition. He says that approach goes back to the origins of the game, to the need for hunters to be successful.
Most of these games come from up north in Inupiaq and Yupik area. And back in the day, you didn't want another hunter to not do well because that meant their family was going hungry. And that's not what you wanted. So we would share the best locations to get certain animals and do certain hunts purely because it was for the better of the people.
He says that focus on the success of the community stayed with the games as they developed throughout the years. Jamie Cabral coaches Petersburg's Native Youth Olympics team. He says the collaborative attitude extends to individual athletes competing against one another.
They will try to help each other get to their highest point, even though they're competing against one another. And so it's all positive reinforcement from the competitors, and they're working together and they're helping each other out. I've just never been in an environment like that where everything is super, super supportive.
He says that while in many sports, a sportsmanship award can feel like a consolation prize for the least skilled team or player, in Native Youth Olympics, sportsmanship is more important than skill. It's more than how an athlete acts when they're competing or when they fail. It's also how much effort they put into supporting their teammates and their competitors.
Because everyone's a teammate there in reality. Yes, they do awards for first place, second, third, but it's how they interact throughout the whole entire tournament, how they respect the games, how they respect the elders that are there, how they respect officials, their coaches, other teams, how they handle themselves on and off the competition court.
After two full days of gym classes with the elementary and middle school kids, the Juno coaches join Cabral and the middle school Native Youth Olympic team in the gym for a community-wide event. Each athlete has a game they're demonstrating as people mill around, trying out the events.
So, two-foot high kick will be there. Inuit stick pole.
Coach Cabral is helping some youngsters with the stick pole. Two kids sit facing each other, feet touching. They're holding a wooden dowel in a sort of perpendicular tug of war. The game would help hunters train to have the strength to pull a seal
Ready?
Out of the water.
Pull. Oh, go, pull, go, 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 go.
Pull backwards.
Pull backwards. Chin up, chin up, chest back. Yay!
After everyone gets a chance to try the games around the gym, folks file into the stands to watch the middle schoolers show off their skills. Eighth grader Brody Whitethorn steps up for the Alaskan high kick. She starts out sitting down, the sole of her right foot on the floor, her right hand holding on to her left foot. Her left hand is behind her, palm to the floor. She looks up at the ball, suspended a good 4 feet above her. "I want it higher," she tells Cabral. He raises the ball. Then she pushes off with her right foot, kicking it up into the air toward the ball. For a moment, her body is balanced on that left hand, the palm still on the floor. Her right foot connects with the ball. In Petersburg, I'm Hannah Floor.
The 7th annual Traditional Alaskan Games kick off today at Yada'at Kahle Juno Douglas High School at 5:30. You can also find a live stream of many of the games at seealaskaheritage.org. And legendary Juno musician Buddy Tabor died in 2012, but his music lives on. A group of Southeast Alaska artists are working to make his music available on streaming services. KTOO's Boston Christopher spoke to Justin Smith and Colette Costa from the Buddy Tabor Project on Juno Afternoon and has this audio postcard.
The '60s came, the '60s went, our dreams of peace and love were spent. The right attacked, the left had died, the good Samaritan crucified. Jesus said to love your neighbor, but the rich got richer, wouldn't do you no favor. Now, baby, ain't living right. Well, I'll be one of that blind and flashing lights.
This project was actually born the day that a friend of mine told me that he couldn't find anybody's music online, because, you know, he switched to streaming. He had the CDs, you know, packed away in a closet somewhere. He went online to try to find one of Bundy's records, and he couldn't. And I thought, that's not good, because everybody seems to get music through streaming these days for the most part. And so if he's not there, he's going to be forgotten about when people like us that bought our CDs out of the trunk of Buddy's car, you know, when we're gone, you know, the music wouldn't be around.
Got a lot of money, honey, nobody cares now, baby, ain't living right. Well, I'll be one of that blind and flashing light.
I played with him one time at, it was called Valentine's Coffee House, people remember. And I was relatively new in town and the room was full. It was my first clue of the strength of Buddy's art when the room was full and the audience was calling out songs for a long time, his songs, asking for songs of his, and everybody in the room knew all the words. And he had an amazing, rich, gravelly voice, and he was a character. And he was always around at Folk Fest. He was sort of a pillar of the, you know, Folk Fest community.
He's always sort of an anchor for a like a song circle, which I had never, from Detroit, we didn't have song circles. But you'd show up, you'd have dinner, all of a sudden there'd be 7, 8, 12 people in a circle and doing a song and passing along, and this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. But he was always sort of an anchor of that, and he would... You know, Buddy would play music anywhere, anytime, with anyone, just about.
When Patrick was a little boy in the ranch lands of San Angelo, he'd sneak up in his room when his parents were asleep and listen to the radio. 50,000
watts. I mean, he was a mentor to, I gave it, untold number of musicians, and particularly songwriters, and really, one of the reasons he liked these song circles is because he wanted to hear what were other people writing and how did it reflect on what he was writing, and, you know, that exchange of music.
Yeah, Patrick comes from Texas. He plays the blues on a Spanish guitar.
You know, the goal of the project is really just for people to be able to listen to his music. People that already love it, or, you know, people that haven't heard it yet. And so when the record goes, if a lot of people go online and listen to it again or for the first time, then it will be a success.
Sha-la-la-la-la-la in the middle of the night. Sha-la-la-la-la-la in the middle of the night. In the middle of the night.
You know, we set up a little Instagram account, Buddy Tabor Project, just perpetuating it. And I think this is the goal of any artist, writer, singer, songwriter, is that their work doesn't die, that their work lives beyond them. And I think particularly in a community like this that is pretty tight, we can make that happen. And I think with the work that Buddy did is definitely worth preserving and worth perpetuating.
Sha-la-la-la-la-la in the middle of the night. Sha-la-la-la-la-la.
in the middle of the night when the lights are low.